If you'd like to know what experts are saying about the new Apple IIgs, we'll translate.
It's got a 32-voice sound chip for digital synthesis.
256K on the motherboard with 1 meg expansion.
Hey, check out this RGB color with super high res.
Told ya, 16-bit processor, 2.8 meg clock speed.
The Apple IIgs.
Some machine, huh?
Simply speaking, the most powerful Apple II made.
Hello and welcome to Coldcast, the best 30 plus minute album conversation you're going to hear
all week long. I'm your host, Airfan Elijah. Join me today. That's not your imagination. That is him living in his new van down by your river. Buster. He's here. Is he hairy? Is he wearing an outfit? I just can't tell. Also joining us, he's a true technocrat. His cats pee in a giant robotic egg. What's your cats pee in? Lewis Wallace is here.
It's, you know, sometimes I want to go to the bathroom in a little robot. That's how cool it is.
Admit it. Sometimes you do. If your wife's not there. Also joining us, it's a British actor we've hired to impersonate Leander Caney since the real one is most definitely dead. Fake Leander Caney is here. He is good, Lewis.
I know. It sounds just like the real one.
Sounds just like the real one.
We spared no expense.
Although you can always tell when you smell his breath and you can't smell alcohol, that's how you know. That's like the real one from the fake one. The real one's a consummate professional. He's never drinking on the job. The old one, well, you know.
Well, it makes this show go a bit quicker.
Leander Caney is finally back with us. I couldn't believe it. When Lewis told us that you'd be back, I didn't believe him. I'm not sure I believe him now. Are you staying for the whole episode?
We'll see. I just sent off a draft to the editor, so...
Oh, see, are you finally finished?
No, nowhere near, but I've got a first draft.
All that pain and anguish and crying in the shower for weeks just for the first draft.
Well, that's the hard part. That's all the heavy lifting, right? You know, getting all the interviews and all the material you gathered to try to put into some kind of shape. And now this is the actual part. That's the part I hate though the most, because it's just so it's really daunting, you know, because there's just so much material and it's like, you know, it's difficult. You know, that's really the hard part. This part where you get to edit it I hate the word finesse it, but, you know, tidy it up is the part I like.
It sounds like an impossible task because you have a whole sea of interviews and material that you've gathered together. And I would guess 90% of it's total garbage. Can't use it.
It's just high.
Incoherent scribblings on notepads that are completely right. Disorganized. And you're like crying every night trying to figure out how you're going to pull this together into a book. So now you've had to finesse the stories out of all of these multiple interviews. And are you able to tell us whether or not you got the big kahuna to go on record?
Oh, not yet. I'm working on it still.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Apple has said that they were willing to open the... what do they say? Like, show a little leg, you know?
Ooh.
But not,
show a little
leg.
Little ankle. So did you get an iMessage of an indiscriminate ankle and you figured out it was Tim Cook? And you're like, oh, yeah. Being serious. You can put this in the book.
My strategy is to go back. You know, I'm hoping that this next stage is where I get to... to get something out of them a bit closer from Mr. Cook himself.
Ooh, that would be magical. Let me know if you need like an assistant. I'll come along. I'll hold your bag. I'll look very professional. That would be intimidating to get him in a room and have to ask him questions for your book. I think that would be nerve wracking.
Well, I don't know. I say that now, but I don't think I'd be that nervous because, you know, I'd have a bunch of questions to ask him. So,
okay.
You know, you go in there with your professional face on and...
Oh, yeah. You have one of those?
Oh, yeah. And some mints, you know, some breath mints.
Lots of mints. Those are critical.
I think he's a pretty easygoing guy. It would be more intimidating to talk to someone like Jobs, you know, who I think would be...
Yeah, no kidding. And you've talked to Jobs. You've already talked to the most difficult guy that you can talk to. So this ought to be easy.
Yeah,
you've talked to all the executives, haven't you? Is there one that you haven't talked to?
Oh yeah, a whole bunch of them. I mean,
have you talked to Phil?
Past and present. Who?
Have you talked to Phil Schiller?
No. I said hi to him. I haven't. I haven't had an interview with him.
Craig Federighi?
Nope.
No, not a word to him. That would be a tough one.
I don't know. He seems like a pretty funny and disarming guy,
yeah,
too.
But you get lost in the hair, you know, and like all of a sudden you're talking, you're not even sure what you're saying anymore, and you're wondering if he knows. You're wondering if he likes you, does he want to hang out later?
Yeah.
And it's tough to stay on topic.
Might be true.
Is there anything else you could tell us about this freaking book that we have not been talking about for 6 weeks since you've been on the show? You got to toss us some crumbs here. Anything else?
Well, you know, I think it's going to turn out okay. I mean, that was quite a piece of it.
You heard it here first, folks. The most okay book of the year.
I certainly didn't have that feeling. You know, early on, it was like, you know, like you said, crying. It was really dehydrated.
You had saved a spot under your couch next to the Steve Jobs or the Johnny Ive book to help prop up the other side.
Yeah, exactly. And they seem the publisher seems to be quite pleased with it, you know, so far.
Fantastic.
They've seen a couple of drafts, and it's going to be turned into an audio book. They're producing that, so that's pretty good. And
Leander, what you got to do is this: when you're ready to start promoting the book, we got to start doing some additional segments where we can talk about different segments of the book.
Yeah, sure, totally.
That'd be great. Get people hyped up. Get their appetites wet for it. You know,
indeed.
Don't you think?
Oh yeah, definitely, Okay, great. We're definitely talking about it more when you know, when it's time to.
I mean, it's going to be several years before that happens, right? Christmas 2023,
next April. But
is that a guarantee? Guaranteed next April? Is that the date it drops?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. All right, we got to move along here because Buster has to take off at 3. We're going to do things a little different this episode. So we have to talk about what is essentially the bend gate of MacBook Pros. No, the MacBook Pros aren't bending, but there is a design flaw in the MacBook Pros. Well, an alleged design flaw. I'll let you be the judge of it. We'll give you all the details. But this is a major MacBook Pro flaw that you need to know about. And this is something that you've probably heard about. This is the keyboard issue. And if you haven't heard about this issue, with the new Butterfly keyboard, there are many people out there that are saying that the buttons are getting stuck and that there's a design flaw with the keyboard. There's a guy who started a petition to get Apple to recall all the MacBook Pros with this keyboard, and they've been including this keyboard in MacBooks and MacBook Pros since 2015. So that's a lot of computers, and Apple has yet to say anything. So we'll be talking about this. I want to get everyone's take, and then I'm going to air an interview that I did with this guy. His name's Matthew Taylor, who started this petition to get Apple to recall the keyboard. And we talked for like 20, 30 minutes. I'll air that, and when we come back, we'll wrap up the show with an all-new under review. And we'll tell you about the gadgets that we have been testing in our lives, what we like about them, what we don't. Before we dive into the first story of the day, let me go ahead and say thank you to Udemy for supporting this episode. Udemy is the largest marketplace for online learning, and you need to sharpen your skills, my friend. Look at Leander King. Look at how scruffy he is. He's a scruffy-looking nerf herder, but he's a man with skills, so he's going places. Do you want skills? Do you want to go places like Leander Caney? Then you need to expand your skill set. Udemy has over 65,000 courses starting at just $11.99. Udemy can help you develop your skills and discover new passions. Maybe you can be the next guy writing a Tim Cook book. And odds are, it will be better than the one that came out before it. Students around the world have used Udemy to get ahead and even switch careers. Visit ude.my/cultcast or download the Udemy app to learn anytime, anywhere. That's ude.my/cultcast or download the Udemy app and you can learn anytime, anywhere. Leander, have you heard about this keyboard issue
that everyone
has been talking about?
What are your
thoughts on this? Because I wasn't really sure what to think about this when I first heard about it.
Well, me too. I'm in two minds about it. On the one hand, you know, it's funny because it's an issue that's really gotten traction, I think, like no other. You know, there's always complaints about it, Apple stuff, but, you know, the few sort of rise above or have the sort of, you know, the lasting power. But I think it's difficult to gauge actually how widespread it is. You know, there's a lot of very vocal critics and a lot of vocal, you know, people that they're making a lot of noise about it. But I think if it had risen to the level where it was, you know, really widespread, I think Apple would be forced to do something about it. And the fact that they haven't done something about it makes me think that it's not as widespread as you'd think if you, you know, read a lot of tech blogs.
That was exactly my thought about it, is how widespread is this? There's a lot of people out there who have anecdotal evidence that there is a major design flaw with this keyboard. And when you hear this interview with Matthew Taylor, he's very convincing. And he presents his case in such a way that you come out of it, at least I did, thinking, we have a major problem on our hands here. This could be a significant issue for Apple. And it seems like they, at the very least, need to address this problem and tell us if it's a significant issue or not. But even if it's not significant, and I think Matthew Taylor made this point, is it's significant enough. Enough people are having problems where Apple still needs to do something about it, because the keyboard is one of those issues that needs to work well every single time. It can't start having problems. You can't start having dead keys. And I should back up and I should define the problem. For those of you who haven't heard, there are people who are having issues with the keys on the Butterfly keyboard getting stuck. So they'll press them and then they get stuck down and they can't get them unstuck. And it seems to be a widespread problem, as in many people online are complaining about it. And a lot of notable Apple journalists have talked about this issue on Twitter in pieces. Let me just run through a couple of these to kind of set the context of this story. So Jason Snell said, Apple's relative silence on this issue for existing customers is deafening. If these problems are as remotely common as they seem to be, this is an altogether defective product that should be recalled. John Gruber said, the keyboard has got to be one of the biggest design screw-ups in Apple history. Woo! What an indictment. Everyone who buys a MacBook depends upon the keyboard, and the keyboard is undependable. Ooh, sick burn. Marco Arment says, Butterfly key switches are a design failure. They are fatally unreliable. Casey Neistat on Twitter tweeted out a pic of his keyboard. The space bar was stuck down. He couldn't use it, and he was trying to use a knife to pry it back up. And he said, what am I supposed to do when the space bar stops working? What were they thinking with this effing keyboard? So you have these well-known people criticizing the keyboard, and I was reading through this petition, and people are pissed. And even if it is a small group of people, you would think that they would need to fix this regardless, don't you think, Leander? Because it's the keyboard, right? You can't be charging people out of warranty to fix a keyboard that is commonly breaking with the same problem.
Right, definitely, for sure. I should say, I've got this machine. I've had it since, the day it was launched, and I have, my keyboard is fine.
I haven't had the problem. And your fingers are really dirty.
Yeah, right. The thing is covered in crumbs and dust and cat hair. it definitely, if there was a keyboard that would get something under it, it would be mine, I'm sure. My kids use it. My wife uses it. It's got a lot of use. And this is sort of makes me wonder why, if it's really that delicate, like I said, if any keyboard would get this issue, I would have thought it would have been my keyboard.
And there are horror stories of people who are getting a key stuck, having it replaced. It gets stuck again. They're having it replaced key will go bad. And Apple will fix the problem as long as your machine is under warranty. But as soon as it goes out of warranty, it costs several hundred dollars to replace a key, or if you want to replace the whole keyboard, it's $700. And of course, Matthew Taylor is arguing that it's a design flaw. So even if they replace the key or the keyboard, that's not going to fix your problem. It's just going to get broken again.
Well, right. That's what makes it tricky. Because, a recall, like a lot of car recalls, if there's something wrong with your seatbelt or something like that, it often involves a couple of bolts or, like a change that can be implemented after the fact. But with something like this, it would require a redesign of the entire machine, right? They're claiming that it's the fundamentally problem with the design of the Butterfly mechanism. They've made it too small. It's too delicate. It's too easy to get stuff trapped under there. So they can't issue a traditional recall. They would have to buy every machine back. It'd be like VW with the diesel engine problems, right? They would have to buy back every machine and reissue something that was completely different.
And the tolerances on these machines are so small. This is what I was asking Matthew Taylor. The tolerances on this machine are so small. It's not like they can just swap the keyboard out for you. And they spent a lot of time and resources, I'm sure, developing this new keyboard. What are they supposed to do for you? What do you expect Apple to do for you, even if this is a legitimate problem? And we'll discuss that. Let me ask Buster. You have one of the newer MacBook Pros. Have you had any issues with yours?
No, I have like the 2015. I think it's the last one before they came out with the new.
So you have the scissor keyboard. Switches then.
Yeah.
What about you, Lewis? Do you have a newer MacBook?
Yeah, I've got the new one, and I've never had this problem. No problems at all with the keyboard. I don't particularly love the way it feels, but it works just fine. I mean, I can only imagine how frustrating it would be if it did stop working. I mean, and when would that happen? I mean, I don't even, to be honest, most of the time, I'm using a Bluetooth keyboard, right?
Oh.
I mean, you're using it. I use those keys on that keyboard when I'm on the road, when I'm in some sort of mission critical situation, right? And when that's, you know, craps out at a conference or something, wow.
So you don't use your MacBook keyboard all that often unless you have to.
No, if I don't have to, I wouldn't. I mean, it's ergonomically horrible.
I hope that your keys don't break. You know, the worst one to break would be the C key, because you'd have to change the name to Alt of Ma. Buster Heine, writer for Alt of Ma. Yeah. even if one key breaks, it's a DEFCON 5 situation. You need all your keys to be working all the time. So let's do this. I'll play this interview. The people can hear Matthew Taylor's case, and then you guys can tell me what you think on Twitter, because my question to him and my question to you guys would be, those of you listening, is if this is a design flaw, wouldn't it be affecting all keyboards? If this were actually a design issue with the keyboard itself, wouldn't everyone be having this problem in some way or another? I just don't know. I don't know what to think about it. It's one of those situations where, as you said, Leander, everyone's being very vocal about this, but it's hard to tell how widespread this is. So let me play the interview, and then we'll come back. You guys can hit us up on Twitter. Let us know what you think. Let me know if you're having problems. I'm genuinely curious. And then we'll jump into Under Review. So let me just, I'll intro you, and I'll just give a rundown, high level, of what the situation is, and then I'm happy to let you take the mic and you just tell me what the hell is going on.
Yeah, and I'm going to make it kind of funny and ask you a few questions.
You can ask me as many questions as you want.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Let's go for it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here with Matthew Taylor. Why did I say it that way? I have no idea. He's going to tell us about this petition that he helped started to get Apple to fix the MacBook keyboards. You probably have heard about this. There's a problem. Some people say there's a problem, a mass problem with the keyboards. And there are things getting stuck underneath the keys, and Apple seems unable to fix the problem. And Matthew is trying to get Apple to bite the bullet, spend the money, fix everyone's keyboards, make them better. Did I summarize that well, Matthew?
Absolutely, Irfan.
Oh, okay, great. So give me the nitty gritty. What's going on?
Well, Irfan, you know, I'm a hardcore Mac user and Apple fan. I mean, going back literally to 1981, just to date myself, I remember I was, you know, 6.5 years old when...
Did you go to grade school with Leander Caney?
I mean, yeah, he and I are from approximately the same stone age, give or take.
That's great.
And, you know, the Apple II was my first. And, you know, I've been using the Mac professionally since 1990. So, you know, I'm a lover of everything Apple does, and I've just been kind of shocked and flabbergasted as to what's going on, not just with this keyboard, but let's just zoom out for a second and go to the 50,000 foot view level. And I want to ask you a question, Irfan.
Do it. Tell me.
Take a second to just think about Apple's current Mac lineup, all the Macs they're currently selling. And you tell me, other than the iMac and the iMac Pro, other than those two computers, which Macs that Apple currently sells would you enthusiastically recommend to anyone?
Oh, you're going to try to make me answer this question on this show? Oh, I'm enthusiastic about all of them, Matthew. Which one wouldn't I want to buy?
Yeah. Name one. Name one answer. Mac other than the iMac or the iMac Pro. Which one would you actually recommend?
I have been forthright about this topic on this show. Honestly, there's not one I can enthusiastically put my $3,000 behind. There's just not one right now that I'm super jazzed about.
Right, exactly. And if you remember when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, he drew a little four-quadrant diagram, right? Consumer and pro on one axis, and desktop and laptop on another axis. And right, so there's, you know, of those four quadrants, we have three quadrants that are just not being handled right now. Obviously, the Mac Pro is, you know, kind of a dumpster fire. The Mac Mini hasn't been updated in forever. And, you know, you've got their consumer and their pro laptops right now that have a major problem. And we're going to get to that in just a second. So, overall, I think Apple has just thrown so many of their resources at the iPhone that they've almost abandoned the Mac. And it's very concerning to me. And, you know, it's good to see that I think the iMac is still awesome. The iMac 5K, the iMac Pro is great. And hopefully they're going to get the Mac Pro back on track. But there's just been too much of a diversion of focus. And my general thesis is that there's been sort of a showdown within Apple between what I like to call the Church of Thin and Light versus the Department of It Just Works. And the Church of Thin and Light has just become kind of a dominant religion there. And it's pretty obvious there was a conversation within Apple about, well, you know, what are we doing here? What are we up to with the Mac? And it's just been about making thin, beautiful objects and not, you know, not what the Mac fundamentally is. You know, I think the first principle of the Mac is the Mac is the best tool to create awesome projects. And that's where the design should start from, is creating the best tool, you know, for people to make awesome projects. And you just can't make awesome projects when your keyboard doesn't even work. And so getting into this keyboard specifically, you know, I own one of these. I own a late 2016 MacBook Pro. I was so excited to get this machine specifically because of Thunderbolt 3 support and external 5K monitor support. And, you know, I can't remember how much Cultcast has gone into the LG 5K monitor situation. That thing is horrific. I own one of them, and the image retention on it is just absolutely horrible. I can't even believe Apple,
really,
you know, partnered
with
Have you read the reviews of the LG 5K monitor?
I have. They've been bad, but I thought they were working on improving that monitor, but I haven't looked into it recently.
See, that monitor had multiple disastrous problems. The first problem, as you may remember, was the the conflict with Wi-Fi routers. Like, if you have a Sonos, like, Wi-Fi speaker like on your desk, the first generation of this LG 5K monitor literally would not work and would kernel panic your machine. And I actually started a petition about that. It didn't get quite, you know, quite as much attention as this. But, you know, when Apple announced, hey, we're finally going to start making external monitors again, that, you know, that was good news. But really, these LG 5K monitors should be recalled, because they did solve the Wi-Fi problem with the remanufactured version. But the image retention is so bad. I would love to show that to you. But
I don't think I've ever even heard about the image retention. That's not a problem that was ever highlighted.
Yeah, it's all over the review. Like, if you look at, I think they're averaging at like 2.5 or 3-star reviews on the Apple Store. And so there's tons of 1-star reviews saying exactly this. So it may not be all of them, but at least at the minimum, a significant number of these LG monitors have terrible image retention. But getting over to the keyboard. So what happened with me was my L key stopped working reliably a little bit less than a year into owning it. You know, I bought it late 2016. And so about 11 and a half months in, suddenly I'd press the L, you know, 10 times and I'd get 7 L's, which is just, you know, completely frustrating. So I brought it into a Genius Bar and they replaced the L key. And then within a month, the replacement L key failed. Mm-hmm. And then one of the shift keys failed. And at that point, you know, I was thinking, okay, what do I do? And Apple, you know, offered to replace the entire keyboard, right? And then I saw Casey Johnston's story. Did you read Casey Johnston's story about how she had her... Yeah, so she got her, for those who haven't read it, you know, Casey Johnston wrote on the outline about her nightmare experience about having Apple replace the entire keyboard and then the replacement keyboard failed. And when I read that, it was sort of something clicked inside my brain where I was like, this is not about a defective part, right? This isn't like a, you know, like a graphics card that has gone bad, where Apple just sourced a bad graphics card from a bad supplier. Mm-hmm. This is a design failure. And that's a whole other level, you know, for Apple, whose slogan is, you know, designed by Apple in California. And they have a whole ad about how they, you know, 1,000 no's for every yes. And they want to design things that are going to positively impact people's lives, that are going to just, you know, help people to change the world. For Apple to have a design failure of this magnitude, where, it, you know, it's a systemic problem because of design, not because of a defective part, I just felt like, you know, someone has to do something. So I started this petition, and here we are, literally 2 weeks to the day after I launched this petition, we're now at 25,000 signatures. So I've been rambling a little bit, Irfan, but you know, you jump in. Tell me what you think about this.
No, that's fine. I know there's been a problem with the keyboards. I've heard that there have been people who have had things get stuck under the keyboards. I'm just wondering, how prevalent is this problem? You know, I hear that you're having problems. You're having significant problems. It might be a design issue. And I actually kind of believe that you might be right. But if it is a design issue, why is it affecting more people?
Well, I think it's affecting a ton of people. Have you? Mm-hmm. How many of the comments on the petition have you read, Irfan?
Zero.
Okay. Well, I've read every single one of them, and there are
all of them.
And
there
are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. And I encourage anyone listening to this who is wondering how big of a problem this is, go to the petition on change.org. You'll be able to find it easily. And
I'll link to it in the show notes as well.
Yeah, right. It'll be linked from the show notes. And just start and read the comments. And they're horror stories. I mean, you see people posting these comments about their problems where they say, you know, my space bar stopped working and there are missing spaces in the comment. right? Because mm-hmm. they're leaving mm-hmm. them just sort of to show people, hey, you know, it's not working. And then numerous comments from people who said they've had their keyboards replaced 2 and 3 times and the replacement keyboards failed. So, and the other thing is, I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was either 9to5Mac or Apple Insider who just ran a poll just like today or the day before that asked people, you know, just everybody kind of, if you own a MacBook Pro or a MacBook with a butterfly keyboard, what's been your experience? 47% said they'd either had some problems with keyboard sticking or major problems. So that's nearly 50% of everyone who owns one of these keyboards is having these problems. So I think what's been, and people have been sort of suffering in silence. People have been taking their computers in, and Apple has either said, we'll replace the keyboard if it was under warranty and then the replacement failed, or if it was out of warranty, you have to pay $600. And then people have had that paid $600 and still had the replacement keyboard failed. So I think tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, we don't know, have been suffering in silence. And now because there's this petition and a lawsuit was obviously filed as well, now I think all these people are coming out of the woodwork, and it's becoming apparent just how gigantic this problem really is.
So in a perfect world, what would you want Apple to do for you? Assuming that this is a design flaw, how are they supposed to fix a keyboard that is, you know, flawed? They can't fix it. What are they supposed to do for you, I guess?
Yeah, well, so I thought very carefully about how to phrase the petition before writing it and publishing it, because it's sort of like once the petition's out, you can't change it. You have to get the petition exactly right. You can't edit it later, right? So, you know, what I wrote on there was Apple needs to redesign this keyboard and then give everybody a replacement redesigned keyboard. It can't be the same keyboard because this keyboard has a systemic design failure. So they're going to have to redesign the keyboard. And what I don't know technically is that even possible? Because obviously there's a certain amount of space and tolerance within, you know, the framework of these existing MacBook Pros. So I have no idea how possible it is or is not to redesign the keyboard and then put that into the existing body of these MacBook Pros. If they can do that, great. If it's not, if it's literally impossible, then they're going to just have to, you know, provide everyone with a replacement laptop that has a new and redesigned keyboard. And frankly, you know, Irfan, I think it's really questionable for Apple to even continue selling these computers at this point. Because at this point, you know, if they've got these ads up saying these keyboards are fantastic, people are walking in spending $3,000, no idea what they're getting into. At a minimum, Apple should be providing people with some sort of notice saying there has been a significant failure rate and here's the risk you're taking. But I think at this point, you know, this entire generation is a lemon. So I think it's really sad for Apple to even be selling these to consumers, because consumers have felt, you know, so just their trust has been violated by these keyboards failing on such a large and systemic level.
Well, clearly you're just holding it wrong. That's your problem. You're just
typing wrong.
You're typing wrong, and you're leaving the Cheeto dust on your hands. You need to wash that off before you type your long-term papers.
Absolutely. I clearly have an insufficient supply of compressed air cans. I mean, the fact that Apple has this support page saying, you know, if you have one of these butterfly keyboards and one of the keys isn't working, hold it at this like 47.2 degree angle and spray air in there. I mean, the fact that that support page even exists is demonstrative that there is something deeply wrong in Apple. Because, I mean, I've been using Apple laptops going back to like 2001, and I've never had a problem like this. And there's never been, you know, a you need to spray compressed error. You know, the keyboards need to be designed to be durable and reliable. And, you know, the keyboard needs to be designed in such a way that a speck of dust isn't going to, you know, make the keyboard inoperable.
Totally ignorant question here. Can you not just pop the keys off and clean them? Do they not come off?
You know, I have not. I mean, I certainly don't want to engage in anything like that because, you know, obviously that would potentially violate the warranty, right? Like they don't, Apple does not support people doing that individually. But my understanding is the answer is absolutely not. I mean, I took my laptop in. They replaced the L key. They just completely replaced the key. They didn't take it off and clean it. They replaced that key. And then that key failed. So I think there is something deeper and more systemic going on than just speck of dust stuff. I think it's an intermixture of a design failure and its susceptibility to dust. I think there are multiple problems going on. And I certainly can't, you know, as a layperson, analyze all the different problems. But what is pretty clear is that people have keyboards that should never have been sold to them in the first place because they were designed improperly. They were not designed to function and last reliably.
Damn you, Matthew Taylor. I was getting ready to buy the next MacBook Pro, and now I'm not sure if I will.
You know, I remember when you bought a MacBook Pro back in, I'm pretty sure it was 2013, because you had a whole thing about the dog barking and the UPS guy showing up, and it was this hilarious story. And I bought the exact same generation of MacBook Pro at the same time, and I think I had a similar sort of experience. So I'm with you there, bro. I mean, nothing is more fun and exciting than getting a new computer. And I was just so thrilled when I got this thing, and it's just,
of course,
you know, my tears of joy have become tears of anguish, I'm sorry to say. And I don't want you to go through that. I don't, you know.
Well, I appreciate that.
I want to save you the pain.
Yeah. Well, we need to wait and see how Apple responds to this. You said you had, what, 30,000 signatures now? 25,000?
25,000 as of 2 weeks in.
And they can't ignore this for long. They're going to have to do something.
I mean, and it's kind of, honestly, I'm just kind of disappointed that Apple has not even responded. You know, if they'd sent an email saying, hey, you know, we saw this petition, we're working on it, we're talking about it internally, we're trying to figure out a plan, that would have been great if we'd just gotten any sort of response. But this petition has been emailed to everybody on the executive team. It's been directly emailed, you know, to Tim Cook and Phil Schiller and other folks at Apple, as well as to the Apple customer relations team. And I even spoke to someone at Apple customer relations who promised she would pass this petition on to her manager. And request a response. And there's just been no response of any kind. And there's a level of devotedness to Apple's customers that just seems to be missing at this point. And I say all this, you know, as a lover of Apple. I don't, you know, I know there's, I don't want to come across as somebody who's just anti-Apple. In fact, I've been pro-Apple for my entire career. And I've published, you know, like something more than 50 books on Apple computers. You know, I've used Mac exclusively for my entire career in publishing. So it's just, I just want to see a greater focus, a greater level of care on the customer experience than we're currently seeing.
Amen. I'm totally with you there. And if there are a lot of people out there listening to this show that are having this problem, I want to hear from you. Reach out to me on Twitter at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. I want to hear your story. And then you can also sign the petition, which I'll link in the show notes. Do you have a URL that is easy to remember?
Yeah, it's something long, but just if you just go and do an internet search for, you know, change.org MacBook keyboard petition, you'll find it immediately.
Okay. Well, good luck to you. I hope you get at least another 25 to 30,000 signatures. So Apple, so Tim Cook is sweating at night thinking about how he's going to address this, because they do need to address it. At this point, there's so many signatures, they have to do something. And if this is a design problem and it's not something that they can fix easily, ooh, they're in it. They're going to have to figure out what they're going to do. And I'm curious to see exactly how they're going to respond.
Can I ask you one other thing, Erfon?
Sure, go ahead.
If we have a second, yeah. So let's say you're CEO for a day. How would you address this issue?
I moved to Mexico and changed my name to Jim Crook. Because I don't know what else you do. How do you, you mentioned the tight tolerances. What else can you do? You can't just go in there and change the keyboard. They spent, I'm guessing, many years redeveloping this keyboard to have a brand new keyboard mechanism. You can't just go in and switch it out like that. You probably are going to need years to change the design of the keyboard, unless they can figure out exactly how to modify the current design to prevent all the crumbs and everything from getting in there and getting stuck. I think, actually, I'm just rambling here. I'm vamping, coming up with my answer on the fly. Here's what you do. You make the keys removable, so that when people have this problem, they can pop the key off, spray a little air in there, pop the key back on, and you're good to go. How is that for an answer?
I wish that would work, but I actually, my suspicion, because of having read hundreds of comments about this, I actually think that itself wouldn't even solve the problem. I think it's more than just the crumbs under the keys. I think there's something going on with the very mechanism, where there are other problems that are arising with the keys sticking that are actually not related to dust. That's just my suspicion based on everything I've read.
Think the actual butterfly keyboard mechanism is failing?
I believe so. I believe there's something going on with the design where there is a very subtle propensity to fail that is built into it, and that is just kind of comes out over time. Because I remember when I got my MacBook Pro, my new one, and I pulled it out of the box, the first thing I noticed the first time I started typing on it was that one of the keys was acting weird. It wasn't the one that ended up failing. It wasn't the L. It was like the A key. But it was acting like weird and giving me these weird sensations. And I was like, wait, why is it feeling, why is this one key feel different than all the others?
Right from the unboxing.
Yes, right from the, and I've read multiple stories from other people who've had those same experiences. So that's why I'm saying I think there are multiple things going on beyond just the dust just under the keys.
So this is more complicated than just getting some crumbs under there.
Yeah, but I like your idea. I mean, if there's a way that they could redesign this and actually make it work, that would be great. But I actually think, I mean, this is what Marco Arment wrote. You know, Marco said, hey, the butterfly mechanism itself is a design failure, and they need to abandon butterfly entirely and go, you know, because back in the day, you know, what did we have? The scissor design. Those keyboards, no one even thought about them, right? Like, no one talked about the keyboard on the previous generation of MacBook Pros, which is kind of a good thing. There are certain things you just don't even want to think about, right? You don't think about the volume button on your iPhone because it just always works, right? So you don't ever want to think about the keyboard. And so that's, I think long-term, they just need to just recognize the butterfly was like a dead end and go back to something that's just sort of, you know, is truly reliable, and be willing to have laptops that are thicker, because laptops working is way more important than it just being like a half a pound lighter or a few millimeters thinner. And that's the design priority issue that they need to address here on a systemic level.
You know what? I've been saying that on this show for months, maybe even years. In an effort to be pioneering, Apple sometimes makes design choices that are not practical and are downright strange sometimes, just to make them, to add features that no one really needs. And maybe the butterfly keyboard is one of those features. I liked the scissor keyboard.
Me
too. The keyboard on my 2013 MacBook Pro is perfect. I wasn't looking for a change. And I know some people love the butterfly, some people don't like it. There's kind of a mixed bag out there, but they could always just swap it back out for the 2013 scissor MacBook keyboard. I mean, I wouldn't be upset about that.
Exactly. Hey, can I buy your laptop, please? Because, like, I really regret selling my sure. I regret selling my 2013, and that's the first time I've ever said that, you know? Like, well, can I downgrade to yours?
Yeah, no problem. Well, you know, now that once everyone hears this podcast, they realize that the new MacBook Pros are not worth buying, the prices on mine are going to go up. So, of course, I'll have to charge you full price. I think I paid $2,200 for this keyboard. So I'll cut you a break. $2,000, you know, $2,000 cash. I'll send it to you. Well, hey, thank you for your time, Matthew. I will link to the petition in the show notes, and thank you for coming on the show and filling us all in. We eagerly await Apple's response, and maybe when they reply, we'll have you back on.
Thanks a lot, Irfan. It's been a pleasure.
And we're back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back live. We're going to go ahead and jump into an under review. Leander Kinney, at the very last moment, he's pulled out a pick. He was searching his desk and office, scrambling for a pick. And one immediately came to him. So I think we all have picks now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. Oh, yeah. Okay. Leander, you were so excited. You had nothing. And you said, calling you last. And then your eyes brightened up and you said, I know exactly what I'm going to pitch. So what do you got over there? It sounds good.
Okay. So this is it's a hot new iPhone case for the iPhone X.
Oh.
That's taking the internet by storm.
Even your son liked it.
Yeah, my kids went bonkers for it. Yeah,
I saw your really post.
It. Yeah, it's funny. It's by Spigen. They're a company from Southern California that does, you know, Apple accessories, including a lot of iPhone cases. And this is they have this line called the classic C1 case, and it's inspired by the iMac G3, the original bulbous Bondi blue see-through iMac.
Uh-huh.
And so this case comes in a range of five colors. There's a sort of Bondi blue, then there's a red one, a ruby, a silvery one, a blue one, I think, a sapphire one. And they are a two-piece case. So there's the kind of a rubbery insert that, you know, protects it, and then a hard see-through outer shell. And the result is that it looks just like the old iMac. You know, you can see through the case to these components that are molded out of the inside rubbery part.
Yeah.
So it looks totally cool. You know, it's like you're looking into an old iMac, but it's actually, you know, it's a case on your phone. And it's a, you know, so it's a well-built, really, really good protective case, but it totally looks really distinctive and really cool. And you know, my teenage kids are really cynical about everything.
I mean, not only are they teenagers, they're Canies.
Yeah, right. It's a double whammy. I know. They picked it up and they were like, oh, that's a cool case, Dad. You know, even so their silly fat old dad, you know, has suddenly become cool because he's got a cool case for his phone.
Man, it didn't just protect your phone. It restored your relationship with your kids. Now they're taking you out on the town. They want to hang out with you all the time. Dad's the coolest.
Hey, Dad, get out your phone. Take a selfie, you know, and then they're like, look at us.
I'm going to show it to all my friends. college, Dad. Right. It does look cool. I saw your post on it, and it's a cool kickback.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And there's another one as well. They have this other another one that makes your phone look just like the original iPhone. So it's a silver case, ooh, like a silver aluminum case with that black with a black. Remember the original one had a black plastic section at the bottom where the antennas were. Mm-hmm. So this is like that. It's sort of a two-part case. It has a silver back and then a black section that goes on at the bottom that covers up like the bottom quarter or fifth of the back. So it looks just like an original iPhone. That one's pretty cool too.
I like speaking cases too. They make some of the highest quality cases out there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like all the cases that I've used are very durable. They last a long time. In fact, I might be using a Spiegel right now. No, I'm using a Spec. The other S company.
The other S, yeah.
Yes, okay. All right. So the Spiegel Classic.
The last thing I should say is that this is that they launched this on Indiegogo.
Really? You know, like
it's a crowdfunding platform. And I think I don't know why they did this. I suspect it's because I don't know why they did it. But anyway, they sent, you know, the ones they sent the samples to us. They got the whole lot, and they were all packaged up and everything like that. It certainly didn't look like an Indiegogo.
Campaign. They already had the samples made, but
yeah,
they still
boxed up and everything. I think they're doing that because I don't know. Maybe it allow, you know, it's a good way to do demand, to gauge demand.
Sure.
So they know
how
many to make or something like that. I suspect that's what it is. You know, because you know they pre-sell all the cases. They don't have to make a bunch.
Oh, I know why they did this. It's because normally when you come out with a case, it needs to be available right when the phone goes on sale, so you can be sure you're going to sell the case. But this is coming out mid-life cycle. So they wanted to see if people actually wanted to pay for this, probably. Because otherwise, they're going to be sitting on tens of thousands of nerdy Mac-inspired right. iPhone 10 cases, and the iPhone 10 is half dead at this point.
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah. So I think it just, you know, it helps them with supply issues.
Okay,
sure.
Cool. All
how much are they,
Leander? In the show notes, I'll also link to Leander's review, where there's a very lovely photograph of a hand, which I presume is your own, holding the phone. And that way you guys can all see it. How much is it, Leander?
Well, it's only $25, but they've got an early bird special, which I don't know, but I think is still good for $18.
$18?
But even so, it'll be $25 for a while, which is pretty good for a case.
I might pick one of those up.
Quality.
$18 for a case? For a nice case? That's not bad at all.
And it really is a good case. Like I just for some reason, I dropped my phone not once, not twice, but three times yesterday in the bathroom.
Jeez.
It's got a tile floor. I couldn't believe it. I mean, what, you know, my hands would gone all, like, it was like a bar of soap. It was like a slippery eel.
You weren't in the shower, were you?
I just got out of the shower. I was listening to music in the shower with my phone.
You take your shower into the phone?
Yeah.
Or you, the other way around?
My phone in the shower,
yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I'm always worried that the steam is going to destroy my phone.
God.
I don't know. It seemed to be fine.
Why have
you been doing that?
Oh, forever.
Really? You never had an issue with it?
No.
I thought
except
the key to
the
steam
thing,
and all that kind of thing, you know?
Anybody ever look at you funny?
No.
Well, who's in there besides all three of us, four
of
us
kids? Well, my wife wanted me to take the dog in there.
What?
Yeah,
God, it just gets weirder and weirder.
Drew a line at that. But yeah, I dropped it. Dropped it three times on the tile floor, and you know, the third time I dropped it, and it made this sort of horrible noise, and I thought, oh no, that's for sure, cracked it. But no, nothing, not
still
a scratch.
Still good to go?
Not a scratch, not a scratch.
Fantastic. Speaking of weird dogs watching you shower, we dog sit from time to time, and there's this one dog that we watch, and it just thinks I'm the alpha male. Every time it comes to our house, it just decides this guy's in charge, and it doesn't like to be without me, so it will follow me around the house, but when I go in the shower, I come out, it's just sitting there sheepishly on the carpet staring at me. It's very violating. I don't like it. It's like, get out of here, dude. Watch me try to get dressed and butt-ass naked. It's weird.
It's very weird.
Yeah, he's like sitting there looking at his lips and stuff. I'm like, I know I look good, but come on.
The cat watches me when I go in the shower. The cat, the cat does that to me. Cat follows me everywhere.
Does it go?
No, he just sort of sits there kind of calmly. He usually has his eyes closed, which is, you know, I think, I don't know if that's intentional or if that's
the right move, yeah. You're like, I saw it sitting there watching my kid shower and its eyes were open the whole time. I don't know what that was about. It looked alert. Okay. I don't know, Buster, you want to go next?
Sure, I can go next.
All right, because you got to go in 25 minutes. So.
Yeah, well.
Not that you'll talk that long about it. So
true.
Let's hear it.
Mine is an iPhone gimbal.
Only it's like totally different from any other iPhone video stabilizing gimbal that I've ever used. It's from a company called FreeFly, and they make like some like huge like expensive cinematic rigs, like $40,000 rigs that they use like big Hollywood blockbuster projects and stuff.
Yeah.
But they've made an iPhone gimbal for like $300, and only instead of it being like a stick like most gimbals, it's kind of like squarish, like you kind of hold it more like a traditional gimbal, like what are those called, like Steadicams instead. And so unlike like DJI's Osmo, and you have like the joystick and you control it with your thumb, this one you don't do that at all. It just uses like all of the software and the gimbal motors to like smooth out where you point the camera automatically, and then it also has like a bunch of cinematic modes too, to like help you get like other creative shots, like if you want to do like barrel roll shots or like really cool time lapses and set like one point and have it move to another point by the end of the time lapse. So they call
those are cool.
So
when did this come out? What is this called? Is it the movie?
It's called the Movi. Yeah,
the Movi. I saw this online. Yeah, this looked cool.
Yeah, and it's super cool because also you don't need a tripod with it. So like if you want to do one of those moving time lapse shots, you just set it up on something already because it's got a flat base. And you can like set the points up right there and then have it do everything all on its own. I think there's an app for it so you can do all these stuff. And then they say like there's a bunch of other features that they're planning to add to it as like over time.
$300 though, especially when the DJI Osmo, they dropped it to what, 120?
True. It is more expensive.
That's a spending device.
I'm not sure on like the battery life differences between them, but I think I find like using this like way more enjoyable than the Osmo. It just feels like a way better system when you're just moving around trying to capture stuff.
I like the form factor much better too on this one.
That's why I like it most is just the form factor.
Because the Osmo is just so long and phallic, you know. Makes me uncomfortable. Yeah, this one, it seems more compact too,
right?
So have you gotten some sweet panoramas with it?
I've tested some of it so far and done some pretty decent shots, but I think the learning curve on it is a little bit harder than I thought it would be, just
because
I didn't understand the controls and stuff. Like, I was always trying to use the joystick that's on the side to move the camera, and that's not how it works at all. So it took me a minute to learn that, like, coming over from a different gimbal. But I think I like, overall, like, the app system better than DJI's on the Osmo. And there's another, like, cheap one, like the Zion Tech gimbal. It's, like, $100 that I have. That one's worse than this, I think. So it just feels like a more solid system overall.
Okay, cool. It is the FreeFly Movi iPhone gimbal. Tell you what, I'll go next, and Lewis, you can take us home, okay?
Oh, only if you tell me who's choking the parrot.
Yeah, who's choking the chicken
some
back there?
Some truck has on the window backing up, and he does it. He backs up like a foot and then stops and backs up another foot and stops. He's right in the middle of the road.
Yeah, it sounds like someone out there is grabbing onto a bird and choking it, Leander. It's like, all right, you got the window closed now?
No.
Or did he just go away?
They stopped.
Okay, cool. All right, I have a device that is not going to be exciting for many of you listening, but I'm going to tell you about it anyway because someday it might be, okay? And I find it to be pure magic. So it is the Elgato portable green screen. And this thing is unlike any product that is out there on the market. In fact, I was looking for a green screen because I needed to put one behind me so that when I'm streaming on Twitch or in certain YouTube applications, I could have a green screen behind me so I could do chroma key and cut myself out of the picture and become a part of, like, for Twitch streams, for instance. With the green screen, you can remove the background and you can become just you're a person against the moving video of the video game. So it's pretty cool. And green screens, portable green screens especially, are not easy to find. There's not a lot of inexpensive ones out there. Most of them that are out there are big, they're unruly, and they're hard to set up. And when I was first looking for a green screen, I wanted something portable, and I wanted something that was easy to set up and easy to put away. And what I had found was this giant spring-loaded green screen that
was tricky to open because it was 5 feet by 7 feet, and when you took it out of the bag, it would pop to life, and it was completely unruly to knock everything down off your shelves. It was impossible to control. And then putting it away was worse. You had to like fold it up into like this taco shape and then collapse it in on itself. I had to Google how to even do it. I couldn't figure out how to even put it away. And it was such a pain in the arse that I stopped using it entirely. What I wanted is what Elgato released right after I bought my other green screen. It is basically a green screen in a can. It looks like a retractable screen for like a home theater. Instead of having the metal canister be on your ceiling, though, the metal canister is on the ground, and then you open up the canister. It's long. It's like probably like 5 feet long. And there's a handle, and you just pull the green screen up, and boom, you have a green screen that has its own stabilization system, so you don't have to like prop it up against anything like I had to do with my other green screen. And it sets up literally in, I don't know, 3 seconds, 4 seconds, and then when you're done, you just grab the top by the handle and you just lower it back into the case, close the case, and the case has a really nice handle on it so you can pick it up and move it somewhere, get it out of your way. So the setup and the takedown are as easy as it could possibly be. It is such a cool product. I admit it's a niche need, but it is a need for a lot of YouTube streamers, a lot of Twitch streamers out there. People need green screens, and it's the best of what's around if you need a green screen for that purpose. It is a little expensive. It's $200, but the thing is solid. The case is metal. All the internal components that I can find are all metal. The actual green screen material itself is 3M quality. It's not some cheap, you know, Chinese knockoff crap.
So it's $152 on Amazon right now.
Oh, did they just lower the price?
5 stars, like
holy moly! They lowered the price $50. They must have just done that because it wasn't as of like 2 weeks ago. So couldn't recommend it any more highly. My only curiosity with it is how long is it going to last? What's its longevity going to be? Because you know it's going up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down constantly if you're using it a lot. And so I kind of wonder how long it will maintain its springiness and its ability to retract easily. But I have no reason to believe that that's going to become an issue. I'm just curious to see how long the green screen is going to maintain that nice springiness to it so you can get it back into place. You can get the green screen on Amazon, as Buster just mentioned, and they also have it on Elgato.com. That's my pick, Lewis. Take us home. Take us there.
All right. Well, remember when we were talking a little bit ago about the MacBook keyboard, and I was saying I never, ever want to type on it if I don't have to.
Because you have this amazing keyboard that you're going to tell us all about.
Close but no cigar. It's because, for the first time, I'm using a laptop stand.
Oh.
The Tiny Tower laptop stand. It's kind of new. I'm not sure exactly when it came out. I just got it in the mail the other day. It looks a lot like Apple design. You know, they're made of aluminum. They come in silver, rose gold, space gray. All, you know, basically just exactly to match your Apple laptop. And they got a nice look. They're solid. It lifts your laptop like 7 to 10 inches off the desk, which is perfect.
Holy moly. Why would you want your laptop lifted this high? Oh, so you can use the screen.
Right. So you got your screen at eye level and you got your keyboard. You know, you use a separate keyboard underneath it. And it's just way better on your neck and shoulders and everything. At home, I have a giant screen that I use, and I have the laptop off to the side where I have like Slack or whatever.
Right.
And even just having that on the desk was starting to make, put a real crimp in my neck because I'm looking down. I'm always looking down. So this is great. The Tiny Tower is great for like a home setup where you got a MacBook as a secondary screen, because getting it up off the desk is essential. You know, I mean, you know, and it really beats like an old Amazon box or something. Right.
or a stack of phone books.
Right.
Yeah.
So it, you know, it looks nice. It's solid. It also, so here's the other thing. It's pretty small. It's like, you know, when it's folded up, maybe 9 inches by 7 inches and 3/4, half inch, probably half an inch thick. And it kind of clever the way it folds up and the arms twist out. It works really easy. You know, like you can open it up in a second, but it's so kind of deceptive. I felt like I was trying to solve a Rubik's Cube the first time I did it. And then I was like, oh, it's, you know, they had these printed instructions. I'm like, what? It turns out it's actually super easy. And I was just like overthinking it. Uh-huh. The only thing I don't really like about it, or, you know, it's not that I don't like it. It's kind of, you know, it's sort of sturdy, and so it's kind of heavy. It weighs like a pound and 11 ounces, which I was thinking this is perfect for you to take on the road, except, you know, it's kind of heavy. I don't know. There are other things like the Roost that Charlie's written about that is it's a much lighter sort of laptop stand, but I've seen those. I've never owned one of those or used one of those. I've seen them, and I don't know. They seem kind of rickety to me. Maybe they're not, but this thing
is nice and sturdy.
Yeah, and you can, you know, you just push a button underneath it, and you can slide it up and down 3 inches. It's got a little the little arms that stick out have these little things that pop out, and like a little lip that sticks up, so your laptop isn't gonna fall off. You don't have to use that if you don't want to. I don't even know if you would need to be honest. The whole thing has just kind of a minimalist Apple design, and you can also buy a little case that will hold your little Apple keyboard and mouse and stuff, and so, you know, it makes a nice little thing you can toss into a bag. It's just, you know, you have to ask yourself, is a pound and three quarters, is that too much? I don't know, to carry, you know, in your backpack or whatever.
Yeah, that would be a lot for me personally. I'm just going to crane my neck and end up like the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Every ounce adds up. But, you know, for a home office, I think it's awesome. And, you know, if you're like going on a business trip and you got a, you know, something you're going to toss into your suitcase or whatever and use in your hotel room, I mean, perfect, right? I mean, I don't know if like for carrying it around to a cafe or something every day, I don't know. Might be a little much.
Please do that, Lewis. Please take this to the Starbucks and use it there.
I'd have to leave my house to do that.
Yeah, I would love to see that picture. Will end up on Tumblr for sure. That will definitely get memed. All right, we have a nice selection of products here today. Oh, Very well done.
I should say that these things, they list for $139. They're on sale right now for $99.
Actually, $89.
What?
You get $10 off instantly on Amazon.
Oh, God. Amazon just beats everyone. Oh, wait, I take that back.
That's only if you have the Amazon Prime store card. So never mind. It is $100.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, boy.
The case is like $12 extra or something like that. So
the case?
You know, for the little, if you got the Apple size keyboard and you got, you know, your mouse, you want everything. You know, they call it the tiny tote. So it's just a little divided thing, you know, zipper. That's fine.
A tiny tote. That sounds like something I would want to carry regardless of if I had this fine piece of equipment.
Most of my totes are tiny.
Yeah, me too. It's a hipster thing. It's just a Seattle thing, you know. Okay, fantastic. Well, I will include links to all of these products in the show notes. You can check them out. The Elgato green screen is indeed $152 on Amazon right now. It's been $200 for months and months and months since they launched this product. So they just dropped the price. So that is a heck of a price for this product. There is nothing else out there like it. So if I piqued your interest, go check it out. Later, Kenny, will you be joining us next week as well?
Oh, yeah.
Are you
yeah.
back?
I'm back.
Oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness. Well, we'll see. We'll see.
I know, yeah. Just in time to stop this horrible podcast going down
it's
the tubes.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it was in the toilet. It hadn't been flushed yet, but it was someone had their finger on the plunger. It was about to get flushed. So now that you're back, hopefully we could recover. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Coldcast we have for you guys this week. But if you want to come say hi to us, if you want to mention or talk about any of the stories we talked about on today's show, we're all on Twitter. I'm at Airfon. Buster is BST3R. Leander is at L. Caney. And Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. This has been the Coldcast, the best 30-plus Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Coldcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. Leander, you take it.
Next time.
Oh, the falsetto. How lovely.
Wow.
My son has been singing falsetto upstairs, so that's
really?
What you think of it.
That's very good. I can tell you've been practicing that. Leander.
Uh-huh.
Be honest. In the last 6 weeks, how many times have you cried?
Well, I haven't cried, but I really felt like it. I mean, I've definitely had like...
Not a single tear?
Well, you know, I'm not really a, you know, waterworks kind of guy.
It's a man's man. Come on.
Yeah, I know.
I've definitely had, you know, I've had horrible... I've woken up in the middle of the night with terrible stabs of fear.
Do you have any chest pains?
Yeah, exactly. And I've tossed and turned and that kind of thing. But
do you look like the president of the U.S. like 8 years after his terms have finally ended? You've aged years.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, you know, like I went in looking like, you know, young Obama, and I came out looking like old Obama.
You were at the start. You were that guy before drinking from the chalice in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And then you were the guy who drank from the wrong cup afterwards.
I don't remember that, but yeah, it's like that.